held slowly as I became aware of her skill wall. Self-taught. She would be strong with it. I lifted my eyes to the fool. He was haggard, but smiling. "Still here," he said softly. Through the dimness, I saw that Lant had taken off his shirt and was sweating in the chill. He, Purr, and Spark were employing our looted swords to dig out the mortar in a section of wall. They had made an opening big enough to admit a man's arm. The stone they had pulled out was as long and wide as a man's forearm, but only a hand tall. The blocks in the wall were staggered. They'd have to remove three above to take out the two below. At least six to move, before Purr could squeeze through. I should go and help. I knew that. But my body had cheerily burned my reserves to try to heal my leg. I cautiously felt the bandaging. Sticky and crusty. No new blood. Still likely to split open again when next I stood. Lant stood up. "Stand back," he said, and when Purr and Spark did, he kicked at the block they'd been working on. "Not yet," Spark said wearily. Purr went back to his scraping.
"Can't we put one of your fire pots in there now?"
Spark gave him a look.
"If you want a chance caving in the tunnel, I suppose we could."
Purr made a small sound of amusement and went on scraping at mortar. The fool and I were silent. One of the prisoners came out of the cell. He stumbled slowly toward where Purr, Spark, and Lant scraped at the mortar. He spoke hoarsely in a boy's voice.
"I will help if you have a tool for me."
Spark measured him with her eyes. Then she gave him her belt knife, and he began to dig feebly at a line of mortar.
"I truly feared I had to choose between you," the fool said quietly.
When I said nothing, he added,
"Her dream of the buck, the bee, and the scale."
"And yet I am here and alive, and our enemies are walled away from us by smoldering rubble. Perhaps I am still the catalyst and can change even her predictions of what must be. I am not dead yet, and I don't intend to die. I am taking Bee home, to Buckkeep. She will be raised as a princess, and you will be at her side to teach and advise her. Her sister will adore her, and she will have a little niece to play with." Two of the freed whites rose and went to the rack of torture tools. They made choices and then joined Lant, Spark, and Purr, chipping away at the mortar. The irony twisted my gut.
"And we will live happily ever after?"
the fool asked. I watched the bits of mortar fall. "That is my intention."
"And mine. My hope. But a thin one."
"Don't doubt us, or we are lost."
"Fitz, my love, that is the problem. I do not doubt Bee's dreams at all."
I opened my mouth and then found wisdom. I closed it. But as a dreadful thought came to me, I asked him, "The container of silver you took from the stateroom, did the servants get it?"
"I stole it to keep a promise,"
he admitted.
"What did you think? That I'd taken it to use on myself?"
"I feared that."
"No, I didn't even bring it with me. I told Boy-O."
Beside me, Bee stirred. She lifted her head and took her hand out of mine. The skill link held, stretched thin as a thread, but still there. I wondered if she felt it. She drew in a deep breath and sighed it out. She looked from me to the fool. He smiled at her as I'd never seen him smile at anyone. His scars stretched with it, but his half-blind eyes shone with tenderness. She stared back at him and leaned tighter into me. As she looked at him, she whispered, "I had a dream." He lifted a gloved hand and stroked her hair.
"Would you like to tell it to me?"
he offered. She looked at me. I nodded.
"I sit near a fire beside Dar and a wolf. He is very old. He tells me stories and I write them down. But I am very sad as I do this. Everyone is mourning."
She finished with,
"I believe this dream is very likely."
She turned worried eyes to me. I smiled at her. That dream sounds lovely to me. I would change only your sadness. She frowned at how little I understood.
Da, I don't make the dreams. I can't change them. They just come to me.
I laughed. I know. The same thing happens to the fool. Sometimes he is very sure a dream will come true. I shrugged one shoulder and grinned at her. And then I make it not true.
You can do that?
She was astonished.
He is my catalyst. He changes things, sometimes in ways I never imagined.
The fool admitted ruefully.
And often enough, I have been grateful for him to do that. B, there is so much I must teach you about catalysts and dreams and...
Prilkop told me that Dwalia was my catalyst. She came and made changes in my life. She changed me. Thus, she enabled the changes I made. And I killed her. I killed my catalyst.
She looked up at me. Her eyes were as blue as forget-me-nots. Her pale curls matted to her head.
Did you know that I killed people? And I burned all the dreams, so the servants cannot use them for evil anymore.
Papa, I am the destroyer.
Her words left me speechless. In a very small voice, she asked,
Can you change that for me?
You are B, and you are my little girl, I told her fiercely. That doesn't change. Not ever. B turned her head sharply, and I followed her gaze. Another prisoner was making her slow way toward us, her pale face pinched with pain as she limped on a welted foot.
In my dream, I saw you, little girl, she said.
She smiled at us with chapped lips.
You were made of flame. You danced in the flames and brought war to where war had never been. With a sword of flame, you sliced the past from the present and the present from the future.
Prilkop started toward us, his face full of worry. The white shuffled closer.
I am Cora, a collator. I studied in the scroll library. I had a lovely little cottage, but I spilled ink on an old text. I knew I must be punished, but I also knew that one day I would go back to my ink and pens and fine vellum, to evenings of rest and wine, and songs by moonlight.
But you came, and you destroyed it all!
She shrieked the last words and flung herself at B. B screamed in fury and fear and stood to meet her. My knife clashed against B's as they drove into the woman's body at the same moment. She went down under our combined weight as I fell onto her. The fool gave an incoherent cry over Per's roar of rage. The killing wrath that rose in me obscured all else. B was fast. She withdrew her knife and sank it again before I could finish the woman. Cora bubbled a whine that became silence. We sprawled on the filthy floor, my hands slick with blood and my leg searing with pain. B rolled off the woman and struggled to rise. The blood on her clothes terrified me. She was not hurt, our skill thread assured me. She retrieved her knife and wiped it on Cora's dirty trousers. Prilkop reached us, crying,
Cora, Cora, what have you done?
He tried to pull me off the white's body, but I snarled at him, and he drew back. Per darted in and pulled B to his side, as Prilkop demanded,
Did you have to kill her? Did you really have to kill her?
I did,
B confirmed. Her eyes blazed at him.
Because I am going to live.
Per had hold of her upper arm and was staring at her with a mixture of awe and horror. I rolled off Cora's body and tried to rise, but could not. The wounded leg would not bend, and my other leg was shaky. Lant came to us.
Step back,
he warned Prilkop in a deadly voice, and hauled me to my feet. I was grateful for his roughness. I wanted no gentleness now. The fool's cry cut through the simmering tension.
Why?
Prilkop spoke before I could open my mouth. Why, indeed, did your catalyst and his daughter murder Cora? You recall Cora, do you not? She smuggled messages for us.
Cora,
the fool said quietly, and his face sagged and aged in that moment.
Yes,
he said in a shaky voice.
I recall her.
She attacked B, I reminded all. She had no weapon, Prilkop objected.
We have no time,
Lant shouted the words.
She is dead, as are many others, as we will all be dead unless these stones come out. Prilkop, come and work. Fall, you also. No time for recriminations or fond reunions. All of you come to the wall, now.
I looked down at Cora's body and felt no regret. She had tried to kill my child. I tilted my head toward the nasty black knife that lay by her body, one of their torture tools. There are tools for slicing human flesh on that rack near the table. Take what will work best on mortar. I nudged the knife feebly with my foot. Here's one for you, Prilkop. He gave me a stricken look, and I almost regretted my words. But B stooped and took up Cora's black knife. She carried it to the wall and began scraping the mortar around the lowest block. The fool made to follow. Fool, will you help me?
How bad is your leg?
Not terrible. It's worse that my body is sapping my energy to heal it.
So the half-blind will lead the mostly lame?
It's supposed to be the other way around. I set my arm across his shoulders. Watch your step, I warned him, and steered him around Cora's outflung arm.
She was not a bad person,
the fool observed softly.
B destroyed her life, everything she had ever known, the only task she knew how to do, all gone.
I don't regret it. B sprang like a hunting cat. Like a wolf.
More like a wolf, I am sure,
the fool said, and his echoing of night eyes put a shiver up my back. It was a shiver that made me smile. Lant looked up and motioned us away from the work area.
I didn't mean you. No room, he said.
As he spoke, Purr and Spark rotated a heavy block of stone. It moved, but did not come free. They went back to scraping. Working tools into the crevices to cut the mortar was slow work, as was dragging the freed block out. Above us, we heard something fall. I looked up at the ceiling.
Do you think they're dead?
The fool asked. I didn't need to ask who. Dwalia and Vindelire? Yes. B killed Symph. Felody is a dead man, sooner or later, if he touched anything in his chambers. And I think B stabbed him at least once in the corridor. Purr cut Coltry's throat, and Capra was still bleeding from your knife when last we saw her. I said nothing of all the nameless people who would be dead in the fire. He was silent for a moment.
Two for Purr, Vindelire and Coltry. Two for B, Symph and Dwalia. Perhaps three, unless I claim Felody. She only knifed him, but if they take him back to his chambers, he's sure to die.
His laugh was shaky.
None for you, Fitz, my fine assassin.
And Spark set off the fire pot that killed the guard troop, and B scared off the others. I didn't mention the guardsmen I'd taken down in the melee. I've lost my edge, fool, as I feared I had. Perhaps it's time to admit that. I should find a different line of work.
Nothing to be ashamed of in that,
he said, but it did not make me feel better.
Later,
he added. Later what?
Later, perhaps, when B is somewhere safe,
We shall come back and be sure of all of them.
If a dragon does not do them first. A smile of pure pleasure broke over his face.
The dragons may have them, if we have B.
I nodded to that. I was so tired, and I had feared that his hunger for vengeance would still be unsated. But as he watched B scraping at mortar, he seemed only pleased, as if having her with us had driven all other ambitions away from him. I had seldom felt so useless as I did then. My hunger grew, and my thirst, but I tried to leave our scanty supply of water for those who labored. When Lant dragged another stone out, I called to him, "Can you see anything beyond the opening?"
"Lots of darkness," he replied, and went back to work.
At one point, the fool helped me hobble over to the seats near the torture table. From there, I could better watch the work. As soon as we moved, the three remaining whites came to claim Cora's body. They carried her back to her cell and composed her on the straw mattress. Prilkop joined them, and they spent a few silent moments standing by her body. When I quietly commented on it to the fool, he sighed.
"Our bee is the destroyer to them. They mourn the dead, here and above in the fire. Even more, they mourn the loss of generations of knowledge. So much destroyed, so much history gone."
I looked over at him and thought him blind in so many ways. "So many weapons destroyed," I said quietly. He did not reply to that. We listened to the others scraping mortar and muttering to one another. Lant pushed a poker under one end of a stone and put his weight on it. It did not move.
"Not yet," he sighed,
and they went on with their scraping. But the next time he leaned on the lever, a stone broke free. The fool helped me hobble closer to the work. Lant reached into the opening, and the muscles stood out in his arms and chest as he gripped the block and pulled it toward him. It scraped, soared, and got stuck, then grated out toward us. It reached the tipping point, and he jumped back as it slid out of the opening. With the fool's help, I hop-limped over to join them.
"One more, and Purr can slip through with a torch."
Purr nodded eagerly. He darted away, and a short time later returned. He'd wrapped rags from one of the cell mattresses around a torture poker and drenched the rags with oil from a lamp. Lant stepped back from the opening as Purr kindled it and poked it through the hole.
"Not much to see. Ow!"
he cried as the flames licked up toward his hand, and he dropped the torch. Bee dragged her small body up and half into the hole, leaning in to peer into the darkness.
"What do you see?" I asked her.
"Steps going down. Not much else." She wriggled deeper into the hole and then abruptly dropped down on the other side.
"Bee!"
I cried in alarm. She stood up, torch in hand, and peered back at us.
"I'm fine."
She lifted the torch higher and I leaned into the opening. Broad steps led down into darkness. I smelled the sea and soaked stone. I suspected standing water at the bottom of the steps. I had a glimpse of cut stone walls and ceiling. The lower parts of the walls were speckled.
"I'm going down the steps to see what I can see,"
Bee announced. "No," I forbade her. I tried to seize her, but could not reach her.
"Da,"
she said, and the hollow beyond echoed her laughter strangely. Her voice was merry as she said,
"No one can tell me no anymore, not even you."
She started down the steps.
"I'll be back,"
she promised. My eyes met Lance. He looked as stricken as I felt.
"I can fit through that hole, I'm sure of it,"
Purr declared, and pushed past Lant and me to thrust his head and shoulders into the gap. He withdrew, then tried again, leading with his clasped hands this time.
"Lift me and push,"
he commanded in a muffled voice, and Lant obeyed. I heard Purr's grunts and the scraping of fabric on stone. I dreaded that he would wedge, but after some struggle, Lant seized his kicking feet and pushed him through. I heard him tumble down a step or two.
He stood and cried breathlessly.
Bee! Bee! Wait for me!
Take a sword, Lant commanded him, and thrust one through the gap. Purr took it and hastened away from us, his body blocking most of the dancing light that was Bee and her torch. Don't go far! He called something back to us and was gone.
They're brave, Spark said, and I saw her measuring her body against the opening.
Lant caught her by the shoulder. Help us free one more stone, at most two, then I think all of us can escape, if indeed it leads to freedom.
I wouldn't go without you,
she promised him, and immediately began to dig at the next seam of mortar. After a moment, Lant knelt to pursue the seam adjacent to hers. I stood and stared into blackness. Shadows that were Purr and Bee moved with the descending light. It grew smaller and then vanished. I waited, eyes straining to see it again, but saw only darkness.
Their torches failed. We have to send Spark after them.
I hoped my voice did not shake too badly. I imagined 100 evil things awaiting Bee.
One more stone and we can,
Lant promised me. Time dragged and no one spoke. There was only the endless scraping of tools on mortar to mark the passing moments. Only darkness inside the hole. I wanted to pace. I could not. They worked in shifts, Lant and Spark, then two of the prisoners, then back to Lant and Spark. The ground-away mortar sifted down the wall. Behind and above us, the fire muttered to itself.
Stop!
Lant said suddenly. He leaned past the whites who had been scraping away to peer into the opening.
I see light! They're coming back!
I pushed up beside him. The light danced toward us slowly, barely an ember in the darkness. Lant fashioned another torch and thrust it toward the hole. Now we could see more, but it was still some time before we saw Bee coming up the steps.
Where's Purr?
I called, dreading some disaster.
He's trying to break an old wooden door,
she called, breathless as she climbed the steps.
It's partly rotten, but we couldn't get past it. He poked the sword through between the planks, and a tiny bit of light came in. So we think it's the way out. The tunnel steps go down, and then the floor slopes. We had to wade through water for a long way. I cut my feet on some barnacles, but then Purr cut one of his sleeves away so I could bind my feet. Then we came to steps going up. A lot of them, going up and up, and finally, the door. Purr said it might have been a guard post once. He said he didn't mind the dark, but I'll want light for going back. We need pokers for levers, or an axe. We will work on the door while you work on the bricks here.
It was a sensible plan. I hated it. We passed the smallest pot lamp through to her, and I surrendered the ship's hatchet. Bee hugged the lamp to her chest, the hatchet and a poker tucked awkwardly under her arm. I watched her carry it away as if I were watching her leave the world.
The ceiling is burning through,
the fool said quietly.
I smell it, and it's getting warmer in here.
Work faster,
Lant suggested, and they all did. When Lant judged there was enough purchase for the poker, he pushed it under the stone.
A moment,
Prilcop suggested, and inserted a bar of his own.
Now,
he said, and both men leaned on their levers. The stone was adamant. Behind me, a small piece of the ceiling fell, landing on the torture table and the steps where I had rested. Flames were dancing on it as it came down. The floors here were of stone, as were the walls, but that would be small comfort to us if burning rubble fell on us. I had gained a fearful respect for smoke and heat. We stared wide-eyed at one another.
Let me help,
Spark cried. She stepped up and balanced on one of the pokers like a bird perching on a twig.
Now push down,
she told Lant. He and Prilcop leaned on their bars. With a slow, crackling sound, the stone moved upward slightly. Prilcop shoved his bar deeper and leaned on it, groaning. The stone grated as it rose out of its bed. It tipped, then it lodged, making the opening even smaller than it had been. The prisoner, who had first come to help, pushed the stone deeper into the opening with all his skeletal weight. The stone slid into the maw of the tunnel. It almost, but not completely, cleared the opening.
Lant threw down his bar and eeled into the darkness. One of the prisoners squirmed in beside him, contributing his feeble strength to move the stone.
"Help me!"
the skinny white gasped, and a second crawled through to join him. I heard Lant grunt, then groan, and heard the grinding noise as the stone grudgingly moved. Slowly, an escape opened before us. The two prisoners quickly wriggled through and out of the way. Lant joined them on the other side and then turned around. Lant's face appeared in the opening.
"Quick! Come through!"
he commanded Spark and stepped back to make room. But as she stepped forward, the last prisoner suddenly threw herself at the opening. Fast as a startled rat, she was through. I heard Lant's exclamation of surprise, and then he cursed.
"They've run ahead,"
he complained. That alarmed me. I did not trust any of them.
"Lant, go after them,"
I begged him.
"Sword,"
he demanded, and Spark stooped, seized one, and passed it to him.
"I'm going too,"
she declared, and slid into the gap, her sword leading the way.
"Bring my pack,"
she called over her shoulder, and then raced down the steps and into darkness. Lant was already out of sight. I had to go after her. I tried to stand, and my leg folded under me. The fool caught my arm and pulled me upright. It simply would not take my weight. Fury welled in me, and for a moment I could not even speak. When I had control of myself, I lifted my eyes to Prilcop.
"Will they hurt B? Do they mean her harm?"
I demanded of him. Prilcop had picked up the last pot lamp in his arms. He looked from me to the fool and chewed his lip.
"I hope not," he offered. "But they are very frightened and angry. It's hard to say what people will do when they are scared."
"Can you go after them and stop them?"
the fool asked.
"I don't know if they'll listen to—"
he began.
"Try!"
the fool cried, and Prilcop nodded brusquely. He pushed the lamp to one side and squeezed stiffly through the opening. On the other side, he laboriously took up the lamp and went down the steps, far more slowly than I wished him to.
"Go,"
I told the fool.
"I can see nothing in there except the flame of the lamp,"
he complained. He groped to find the tunnel's mouth and then clambered spryly over the wall.
"I'm handing you a sword," I told him. I did a slow bend to pick it up and passed it through to him.
The blade had not been improved by the use we'd made of it. The ceiling groaned behind me. I spared a backward glance. A large section of it was sagging.
"Don't wait for me. Touch the wall and go down the steps to the bottom. I'll be right behind you."
The fool nodded grimly and turned away from me to venture off into a darkness he could not see. We'd need a torch. I began my limping circuit of the wall, passing Spark's pack next to my firepot harness on the steps. I'd get them on my way back. I edged on, gimping from wall to table. At last, I seized a chair and used it as a bulky cane. The deeper I went into the room, the more my eyes stung. By the time I reached the cells and the crude mattress there, I knew I'd made a bad decision. Bits of ceiling were flaking and floating in the air. I dragged the thin mattress onto the chair. Scraping the chair over the floor, I began my journey back. My eyes were closed to slits, and to take a deep breath invited a coughing fit. A piece of ceiling the size of a pony collapsed onto the upper stairs. I looked up at it in time to see another section giving way. As it came down, I threw up my arm to shield my face from the wash of heat. The smoke in the room billowed toward me. I pushed the chair frantically toward the opening in the wall, all thoughts of a torch abandoned. With a groan, a beam fell almost beside me, charred and glowing along its length. A flame leapt up as if rejoicing in its freedom and ran along the fallen timber. Another followed. Paragon's words came back to me.
"In water and fire, in wind and darkness. Not swiftly." Was this my time to die?
As if to confirm that thought, a big piece of ceiling fell. The gust of hot wind knocked me over, chair and all. I sprawled on the floor, temporarily blinded and disoriented. I rubbed my sleeve over my eyes. Which way was the opening to the tunnel?
Fitz! Where are you? Fitz!
The fool. I closed my stinging eyes and dragged myself over the cinder-littered floor toward his voice. I bumped into the table and called,
Fool! Here! This way!
I reached the wall. I felt his hands plucking at the back of my shirt and hauled myself up and into the opening. With him pulling and me clawing, I tumbled through into cooler air. He followed me more gracefully.
What were you doing?
He demanded. I wanted a torch.
You nearly became one.
I opened my eyes, wiped them on my sleeve, rubbed them, and opened them again. The scarlet light from the fire in the dungeons behind us gave an unearthly illumination to the worked stone walls and the arched ceiling above us.
Up you go,
the fool said. He dragged my arm across his shoulder and stood up. Together, we stumbled to where I could put one hand on the wall. I lurched down a step, then two.
Your legs are wet. There's water at the bottom of the steps, and barnacles on the walls, too. And the tide's coming in, Fitz.
We both knew what that meant. I let the cold dread creep into me, and then asked him, Do you think they'll hurt B, the whites who ran ahead? He was panting with the effort of helping me descend another step.
I don't think they can. They're no match for Spark or Lant. For that matter, I don't think Purr would let any harm befall her.
A moment, I said, and leaned on the wall to cough smoke from my lungs. When I could draw a full breath, I straightened up. Let's go, I told him. With every step we lurched down, the red light from the burning dungeon room offered less illumination.
Dar?
B's small voice floated up to me from the darkness. Both the fool and I startled. I peered down the steps into a well of increasing darkness. A feeble light glimmered down there.
B, I'm here with the fool.
To him I said, Leave me. Go to her. And he started down the steps. The light became a dying torch. It bobbed as she reached the bottom of the steps. The light was reflected in standing water around her ankles. She raised her voice in an anxious shout.
Dar! Purr broke through the door!
Purr said we would wait for everyone else, but the prisoners ran up to us, all wet from the tunnel. They were angry. If Purr had not been there with his sword, I tried to turn their minds, but I could not.
She paused for breath. I lurched down another step, then two.
Purr threatened them with the sword and they ran away. Then Spark came and Lant. Purr told them what happened, and Spark ran after them to kill them. Lant told us to stay where we were and went after Spark. Dar, those whites will run right back to Clary's and tell where we are. I came to warn you. They will come in force and kill us all. Purr stayed to guard the door. He'll stop them there if he can.
Her voice did not shake until the end of her report. As she started up the steps, I saw she was wet to her hips. She had come to us through deeper water. How high would it reach? Did we dare attempt to escape that way? As she climbed the steps toward us, her torch revealed old watermarks and barnacles on the wall. How high could it reach? I didn't like my conclusion. A high tide could come halfway up the steps, completely filling the tunnel below. Behind us, fire. Below us, rising water. No good choices. Then the chamber behind me exploded, and I flew through darkness. Chapter 37 Touch.
The appearance of the pocked man is always a harbinger of disaster to come. He was seen not only in Buckkeep Town, but in Grimsby Ford and Sands Edge, in the weeks before the Blood Plague reached the six duchies and devastated our folk. He was seen standing on the balcony of the doomed Finn's Tower 2 days before the earthquake that brought it down on the town. Some have claimed to have seen him immediately before the first forging at Forge. On the night that King Shrewd was assassinated,
The pocked man was seen in the washing court and by the castle well in Buckkeep Castle. He always appears as a cadaverous man, pale of countenance, his face marked with red pox.
6 Duchy's Law.
Fitz! Fitz! Be! Be!
A pause.
Fitz! She's hurt! Fitz! Damn you! Where are you?
I didn't recall lying down. Had he been calling my name over and over? I was woozy and tired. The fool's voice came from far away. I'm here, I replied slowly. Ringing silence answered me. Absolute darkness all around me. Fool, is that you?
Yes, don't move. I'm coming to you. Keep talking.
I'm here. I can't get up. There's something on top of me. I reached for my last memory. Clarice, a tunnel. B. What happened? Where are B and the others?
I have B.
The fool's voice was a drawn-out wail.
She's alive, but not aware.
Be careful. Don't move. Too late. I heard him scrabble over loose rubble and then felt his groping touch. Wheezing with pain, he sat down heavily near me. I reached for him and found B's small, slack body in his arms.
Ida and Al, no!
Not this way. Not when we are so close. Fool, is she breathing?
I think so. I can feel fresh blood, but I'm not sure where it comes from. Fitz, Fitz, what are we to do?
First, be calm. I tried to move closer to him. I could not. My legs were pinned to the earth. I was on my back. Slowly, awareness crept back to me through my panic. My head was lower than my feet. The steps. I had fallen on the steps, and something was on top of my legs just above my knees. I groped toward it, but could barely reach it with my fingertips. I tightened my belly muscles and tried to sit up toward it. My back screamed, and I gave it up.
Fool,
there's something on top of my legs. I can't get up. Set B down carefully. Let me touch her. I could hear his uneven breathing as he lowered my child to a rubble-strewn step beside me. Are you hurt? I thought to ask him.
Far less than I deserve to be. It's my foot, the one they smashed. It's dragging. Oh, Fitz, she is still so small. After all she has been through, must we lose her now?
Be steady, fool. I had not heard him so emotional since Shrewd died. I forced a calm I didn't feel into my own voice. I could not allow him to panic. You must be her strength now. Here is my hand. Set it on her head. The darkness was complete. I touched her hair, her ears, nose, and mouth. Scars, yes, but no fresh blood from her ears and nose. I next checked her chest and belly. Then I cautiously patted each of her limbs. I ventured along the skill thread we shared. I found her awareness curled small, but whole. Fool, she is just stunned. Her shoulder is damp, but it's not very warm. It may be only water, unless... Is it your blood?
Oh, perhaps. My scalp is bleeding, and I think my shoulder.
Worse and worse. I had to focus, order my thoughts. Fool, I know what happened. Spark's pack was left behind in the dungeon. She had some of Shade's fire pots in it. At least one exploded when the ceiling fell on them. There may be more back there. We must get B out of here, immediately. Help me get free.
What of B? Can you wake her?
Why? So she can be frightened with us? Fool, she will wake on her own soon enough. Let us be ready before she does. Help me get free. His hands moved down my belly and then over my thighs.
A beam came down,
he said quietly.
It's across your legs, with rubble on top of it.
His hands touched my leg and tried to push under it. I clenched my teeth against the pain that woke. He moved his hand under my leg and tried to force it between my flesh and the edge of the stair.
You are pinned against the stone steps. I can't dig anything away from underneath you.
Our mutual silence was a second darkness. I had my hand on Bee's chest. I could feel it rise and fall. She lived. I heard the fool swallow. I spoke past the ringing in my ears. Bee is what matters now, fool. Remember? We agreed on this. If it came to a choice and you had to make it... The dividing place is now, and there is no choice. You cannot save me. Pick her up and carry her out of here while you still can, because if the fire reaches another fire pot, the rest of the ceiling may come down, and we know the water is rising in the tunnel. No time to wait. Go now. I heard him trying to catch his breath in the silence.
Fitz, I can't.
You must. There's no time to argue. I'll say it for you. You don't want to leave me here to die. I don't want you to leave me here to die. But you must and you will. I'm done for. Save my child. Save our child.
But I can't.
He sobbed in a breath.
My foot is broken again, and my shoulder is bleeding a lot. Fitz, a lot.
Come here. Let me feel it. I tried to speak calmly. I did not feel calm at all.
I'm right here,
he said. I had a moment of absolute clarity and inspiration. I felt his hands touch my face, one gloved, one with bare fingertips. Perfect. I reached up and caught his gloved wrist and held it tight. You can, I said as I peeled the glove from his hand. And you will. Take what's left of me, fool, and save Bee.
What?
He demanded, and then, as he realized my intent, he struggled, but with his shoulder torn he had no real strength. I pressed his silvered fingers to the side of my throat. I felt it then, an ecstasy that burned, but filled me with joy. Then the connection came, just as it had that time in Verity's tower room. Too much, I had said then, and fled from it. Now I wrapped it with my awareness. I felt the fool and saw his sparkling tumble of life and secrets, like the stars in a night sky. No, not taking from him. His secrets were always his to keep. How to do this? He was trying to pull his hand clear of my grip, but I was doing the last thing I expected to do with my life, so I had to do it thoroughly. There could be no mercy for either of us. I threw my other arm around him, pulled him into a hard embrace, and held him tight despite his struggles. The boundaries between us gave way. We were merging in a way that felt like a healing. I sensed the torn meat of his shoulder, knew a striating crack in the bone there, and the stabbing pain of the little broken bones in his foot. I spoke into his panting mouth. Be still. Don't fight me. This must happen. I drew a breath and held it. Gripping his wrist hard, I embraced him with more than my arms. As I breathed out hard, I pushed my strength, my healing, my all through the connection I had forced. I recalled how I had taken strength from Riddle. Let it flow the other way, I thought, and poured it into him. I needed nothing of what was left. I touched the damage inside him. He shuddered at the pain and went still. You leave little for us, my brother. All the more to save Bee. The fool lay stunned in my arms, sprawled on my chest. His resistance was gone. I let my fingers walk over his shoulder. Shirt and skin were torn. The hanging flap of flesh dizzied me. I lifted it into place, held it firmly there, sealed it. Bone be whole, and flesh be knit. I healed him fiercely, as swiftly as I could force it, sparing neither of us. You should go with him, Night Eyes. You should go with Bee. If we end here, then I meet the end with you, as you ended with me.
How is the hunting where you are? It will be better with you. I'm coming to you, my brother. I willed my skill into the fool's body, all of it. I forced his ankle to straighten, pushed the tendon to where Shade's old books had shown me it was supposed to be. Be made right, I commanded it, and with my skill went my strength. I felt myself dwindle. The fool stirred, then shuddered at the pain. He fainted again. Good. He could not fight me. But I had a last struggle with myself. I felt myself soaking into him. If I let go, we would be what I had glimpsed when I had called him back from death. I'd be home with him, a whole thing. But no, that was not a decision for you to make. I would not go with you. I know. I know. The fool had to live on as himself. He had to save B, not me. We had promised each other. My arm fell away. I peeled my awareness from him. With the last of my strength, I found B's curly little head and set my hand on it. Ida, protect you. I prayed to a god I'd never known. I found the skill thread to her, snapped it. Then, with certainty, I whispered, "The fool will save you." He was already stirring. Time to leave. Time to make this choice mine, not his. I sighed out a final breath and found Night Eyes waiting for me. "Are you ready, my brother?" "Yes." I sank into the nothing. Chapter 38, Ship of Dragons. The White Prophet Gerda was barely 20 when she set out into the world to find her catalyst. She had dreamed of her often since she was an infant. She travelled far from the peaceful green lands of her birth, going both by sea and by land, to a village far in the mountains where a peak smoked in the distance and glowed red at night. She came to Kalina's home. Kalina was a grandmother who lived with her son and his wife. During the day, while her children hunted and fished, she had the care of their seven youngsters. This Kalina did without complaint, though her bones ached and her eyes were dimming. Gerda came to her home and sat down on the doorstep and would not go. Kalina did not know why she had come or why she would not leave. "Here is food for you, and now you must depart," she told Gerda. But at nightfall, the White Prophet was still there. "You may sleep by the fire, for the nights are cold, but in the morning you must go," she said to Gerda. But in the morning, Gerda sat once more on the doorstep. Finally, Kalina said to her, "If you must be here, be of some use. Sit and churn the milk to make the butter, or rock the cradle for the squalling baby, or stitch the furs into winter cloaks, for we are not far from a time of snow." And all these things Gerda did, without complaint or recompense, other than food to eat and a place by the fire. She served a folk not her own, just as Kalina had. And so Kalina's family came to love her. Gerda taught the children, too, to read and to write, and to understand numbers and amounts and distances. She kept Kalina alive for many a year, and in turn Kalina let her stay. And as years passed, Gerda taught the children of the children as well, to the number of 40 children, and then their children. Thus did she change the world. For from among those she taught, a woman arose who brought her people together, and they raised sturdy homes and clever children. They lived with the forest instead of upon it, caring for their territory and their people. They served one another well. A descendant of that woman, B became a man who was a servant to all of the folk who lived in those mountains, and in that way he led them. As did those who came after him, each one taking up the mantle of one who leads by serving. And thus did the white prophet Gerda change the world.
Accounts of the Prophets of Old.
I remembered when I was cold and Revel was carrying me into the house. We were going down steps, but I was wet cold, not snow cold. My feet were dragging in water, or was it snow? I lifted my head from his shoulder.
Revel?
I whispered into the scintillating light.
B, you're awake?
The light was talking to me. It was a nexus, shimmering with possible futures. It was not Revel. This light was a jabbing, glittering thing, stabbing and prickling me. I tightened my muscles to fling myself away, but it spoke again.
Don't do that. It's dark here, and water is coming into the tunnel. You took a bad fall. You've been unconscious.
Put me down. It's too much.
Too much?
He whispered. He sounded confused. I put up my walls, but it did not dim. The light did not illuminate. It blinded. So many possibilities striating out from this moment.
Let me go,
I begged him. Still he hesitated.
Are you sure? The water will be deep for you, perhaps chest deep, and it's cold.
Too many paths, I shouted at him. Let me go, put me down, let me go.
Oh, B,
he said, and I knew him. The blind beggar from the marketplace, the one my father called Fool. Beloved, come to save me. I did not like how slowly he lowered me into the water, but he was right. It came to the bottom of my ribs and was cold enough to make me catch my breath. I stepped back from him and nearly fell. He caught at the ragged shoulder of my shirt. I let him hold on to it. Blessed darkness wrapped me. Where is Per? He was the first safe person who came to mind. Then, where is my father?
You left Per at the mouth of the tunnel. We will reach there soon, I hope. It's slow going. Wading against the water is work.
Carefully, he asked me,
Do you remember where we are and what happened?
Some of it. I wished he would speak louder. My ears were full of ringing. My father had probably gone ahead with the others to catch the fleeing whites. I wished he had not left me. I took a step, stumbled, splashed, and stood upright.
I can still carry you if you wish.
No, I'd rather walk. Don't you understand? When you touch me, you make me see all the paths, all of them at once. He was silent. Or was he?
Talk louder, I begged him. I saw nothing when I carried you. No paths, only the dark that we move through. B, take my hand. Let me lead you.
I felt his fingers brush my bare arm. I twitched away from him. I can follow your voice.
This way, B,
he said with a sigh, and began to walk away from me. Beneath the cold water, the floor was flat but gritty under my feet. I held my arms above the water. It was hard to take a deep breath that way. I followed him for a few steps, and then asked again, Where is my father?
Back there. B, you know there was a fire, and you know about the fire pots we carried. There was an explosion, and the ceiling collapsed. Your father... It came down on him.
I stopped walking, with chill water to my waist, with dark all round me. A different, colder sort of darkness was rising inside me. I found there was something beyond pain and fear. That something was filling me.
I know,
he said hoarsely, but I knew he could not possibly know what I was feeling. He spoke on.
We must hurry. I carried you down a slope, and the water got deeper. Now we are on the level, but the water is still rising. It's the tide coming in. This tunnel may fill completely. We cannot tarry.
My father is dead? How? How can he be dead and you be alive?
Walk,
he commanded me. He began to slosh forward again, and I followed him. I heard him take a breath, and then, after something that sounded like a sob, he said thickly,
"Fitz is dead."
He tried to continue speaking, but could not. Eventually he said,
"He and I both knew it might come down to a choice. You heard him say as much. I promised that I would choose you. It was his wish."
In a choked voice, he asked me,
"Do you recall your dream of the scales?"
I have to go back to him. He was fast. Even in the dark, he caught my wrist and gripped it tight. I staggered from the light, and then he had me by the back of my shirt.
"I can't allow that. There is no time, and there is no point. He was dead when we left him, B. I heard no breath from him. I felt no beat of his heart. Did you think I would leave him alive and trapped?"
His voice had started out tight and level, but it ended wild. His breathing was hoarse and echoed.
"The last thing I can do for him is take you out of here. Now we go."
He walked on, half dragging me through the water. I kicked, but could not fight him. I tried to twist out of his grip.
"Don't,"
he said, and it was a plea.
"B, don't make me force you. I don't want to."
His voice broke on the words.
"It is as much as I can do to force myself to go on. I wish I could go back and be dead beside him, but I have to take you out of here. Why did Lant let you come back alone?"
He sounded grieved about that, as if I were a helpless little girl, or it could be someone else's fault. "He didn't," I pointed out. "I told Purr to stay and guard the door while I came back to warn you."
"What of Prilcop?"
he demanded suddenly. "I passed him on my way to warn you."
"How much farther to the door?"
"We're on the flat part. Then we come to a place where the floor slopes up. Then the long stairs. Then a small flat place and more stairs to the door." "Did it crush him?"
"B,"
he said very softly.
"He said he wouldn't leave me again."
He said nothing.
"He can't be dead,"
I wailed.
"B, you know that he is."
Did I? I felt for him inside my mind. I lowered my walls and groped to where he had been. No wolf father. And the connection he had shared with me since he had touched my head. Gone. "He's dead."
"Yes."
That was the most terrible word I had ever heard. I reached out and caught the sleeve of his shirt. I held to it, and together we walked faster, as if we could run away from his death. The floor had remained level, but the water was getting deeper. We walked on through the blackness. Water sloshed around my chest. The floor began to slant upward, but the water still became deeper.
"Faster,"
he said, and I tried.
"What's going to become of me?"
I asked suddenly. It was a terrible, selfish question. My father was dead, and I wanted to know what would happen to me.
"I'll take care of you. And the first thing I will do is get you out of here to the ship that will take us somewhere safe. And then I'll get you home."
"Home," I said, but the word was hollow. What was home? "I want Purr."
"We're going to Purr. Hurry."
He halted, pulled his sleeve down over his hand, and then seized mine. He dragged me through the rising water, moving so quickly that my feet barely touched the floor. He stumbled when we came to the first shallow step, and we both fell in the water. But in a moment, he was on his feet, and we were climbing the steps, fleeing the water that seemed to be chasing us. The steps were unevenly spaced. I banged my ankles and tripped and hit my shins. He didn't let go of my hand, but dragged me relentlessly on. For a long time we climbed steps, but the water got shallower very slowly.
"Is that light?"
I squinted. "Not daylight. It's a lamp."
"I can see it."
His voice trembled as if someone was shaking him.
"Huh? Lant."
It was Lant. He came down the steps to us, holding the small lamp in one hand and his sword in the other. His face was a mask of light and shadow above it.
"B,"
Fitz, fool, why were you so slow to follow?
We feared the worst. He came sloshing toward us, talking as he came.